All right, it looks like it's about time to get started here. Rick, would you mind leading us in prayer as we get started?
Holy God and Father, we're thankful for this time we have to come together to study things from your word. And pray that our hearts and minds be open, as Zach teaches us from your scriptures this evening, and that we will do our best to learn from what you have revealed to us, and learn how to better serve you, how not to serve you, and certain examples, Father. Pray that you be with Zach, that he will present these things in a way that is helpful to all of us and in accordance with your word. We're mindful of all those who are dealing with many issues, and especially those who are not able to be here this evening for those reasons. And I pray your blessings upon them. Pray your blessings upon those who are struggling with their faith, that they will be encouraged either providentially or through our words or through opening your word, Father. Help us each day, Father, to strive to serve you more perfectly and to trust in you when we fall short. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you, Rick. So as we're continuing our class is on the secondary characters of the Bible, rather than the famous examples like Abraham and Moses, tonight we're going to be looking at Korah. And Korah is, as we all know, I'm sure, one of the evil characters who he's not going to be a good example to us. But there's a lot that we can learn, I think, from Korah and from his story. So to begin with, let's look at Exodus chapter 6, starting in verse 14. Exodus chapter 6, just to give us a better idea of who Korah is, where he's coming from. This is a genealogy of Moses and Aaron, and Korah is mentioned in here. So just to be merciful on everybody else who don't like to read names, I'll go ahead and read this section. So Exodus chapter 6, starting in verse 14, we're going to read down to verse 25. These are the heads of their father's houses, the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. These are the clans of Reuben. The sons of Simeon, Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. These are the clans of Simeon. These are the names of the sons of Levi, according to their generations, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, the years of the life of Levi being 137 years, the sons of Gershon, Libni, and Shimei, by their clans, the sons of Kohath, Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uziel, the years of the life of Kohath being 133 years, the sons of Merari, Mahli, and Mushi. These are the clans of the Levites, according to their generations. Amram took as his wife Jochebed, his father's sister, and she bore him Aaron and Moses, the years of the life of Amram being 137 years. The sons of Izhar, Korah, Nepheg, and Zichri, the sons of Uziel, Mishael, Elzaphan, and Sithri. Aaron took as his wife Elisheba, the daughter of Amminadab, and the sister of Nashon, and she bore him Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, the sons of Korah, Asir, Elkanah, and Abiasaph. These are the clans of the Korahites. So we have here, if you noted, Korah is the son of Izhar, who is the son of Kohath, son of Levi. So he's one of the Kohathites, if you remember that the Levites were divided by their clans as to what their duties were in the tabernacle. He also, if you notice from this, that he is actually a first cousin to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. And Korah has three sons, which we'll get to that later, but it's interesting that we actually know the names of the three sons of Korah. All right, so as a Kohathite, from Numbers 4, verses 1 through 20, that's where it tells about what the duties of the Kohathites were. We're not going to take time to read all of that. But they were to be, or they were charged to help with moving the holy things of the tabernacle. But part of their charge was that they were not allowed to see or to directly touch any of the holy things. They had to be covered by the priests before they came in to touch them. So they were only touching the covering, and they could not actually see the items themselves, because to actually touch them or to see them held a death sentence. Also, as another, and we know Korah primarily because of the rebellion that he led in Numbers chapter 16. But just before we get into that, we have what Daryl taught on with the spies who are sent into Canaan. That was just a couple chapters prior to Korah's rebellion. So you might keep that in mind as you're trying to understand who Korah is and why he may have acted the way he did. So I don't know exactly how long this is after that incident, but it's probably not very long. We know that after that incident was when God condemned the people to wander for 40 years in the wilderness until that entire generation died off. And so they were not, or that generation would not receive the promise of a land flowing with milk and honey. So keep that in mind as well, because that's probably a fairly substantial motivating factor. And in Numbers chapter 16, that statement is brought up about not receiving a land of flowing with milk and honey. So if we turn to Numbers chapter 16, and we've got an extensive reading here. So, Daryl, would you mind reading Numbers 16, verses 1 through 11?
Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and on the son of Peleth, the sons of Reuben, took action. And they rose up before Moses, together with some of the sons of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, chosen of the assembly, men of renown. And they assembled together against Moses and Aaron, and said to them, "You have gone far enough, for all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. So why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" When Moses heard this, he fell on his face, and he spoke to Korah and all his company, saying, "Tomorrow morning the Lord will show you who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near to himself, even the one whom he will choose, he will bring near to himself. Do this, take censers for yourselves, Korah and all your company, and put fire in them, and lay incense upon them in the presence of the Lord tomorrow. And the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the one who is holy. You have gone far enough, you sons of Levi." Then Moses said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi. Is it not enough for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the rest of the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself and to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister to them? And that he has brought you near, Korah, and all your brothers, sons of Levi, with you? And are you seeking for the priesthood also? Therefore, you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. But as for Aaron, who is he that you grumble against him?"
Thank you. So we know this is Korah's rebellion, but he was only one of the ringleaders of this rebellion. How many ringleaders were there? I would say there were 250 men chosen, but who did the choosing? There are some people above those 250. Yeah, there's four of them, yeah. There's Korah, Dathan, Abiram, and On. So Korah, as we've already noted, is a Kohathite of the tribe of Levi. What is the lineage? Where did these other men come from? Which tribe or tribes? So the other three look, it seems to me that all three of the other men actually came from Reuben. And as has been pointed out, they chose 250 chiefs or leaders of the congregation to support them in this. And these were well-known men, or men of repute. So it's a very extensive rebellion. Later on in verse 19, it mentions that Korah assembled the whole congregation against them. So this may be not just a large portion of the Israelites, it might be just about the entire congregation who's rising up against Moses and Aaron, incited by these four men initially. So what was their complaint?
Too much responsibility.
Too much responsibility? Who had too much responsibility?
Well, Moses and Aaron. They said Moses and Aaron had taken on too much for themselves.
Yes. So they were saying that Moses and Aaron had overstepped in setting themselves above the people. And what else did they say? Why did they say that, or what was their explanation for why that was overstepping? And God was with the whole congregation. The whole congregation is holy, and God was with them. So what does this complaint reveal about Korah's motives?
He wanted a position somewhere.
Yeah, he wanted more position. Any other thoughts?
He was seeking equitability.
Equitability, okay. It's not how I thought of it, but... So he was not accepting the authority that Moses and Aaron had, but he wanted more power for himself, is what I'm seeing in it. And he wanted more, or a greater position for himself. So who was it that they complained to? Okay, they brought their complaint to Moses and Aaron. And how did Moses respond? And why? I find his response kind of interesting.
Moses fell on his face.
Yeah, Moses fell on his face. Why would he fall on his face?
Because he knew what was coming.
Yeah.
He couldn't believe what he was hearing.
Okay, he couldn't believe what he was hearing. He knew what was coming, what this would end up leading to. Do you think it may have also shown Moses' own humility in contrast to their saying that he set himself up over the people? He's showing his humility in falling down like that.
God will choose. God will show who is
yes.
Holy.
Yeah. He turns it to God. And who was the one who actually put Moses in his position? No. Yeah, God was the one who chose him. Moses did not put himself there. Aaron did not put himself there. That was God's choice. So them complaining to Moses and Aaron is really complaining to the wrong people. So what were the instructions that Moses gave to the people? Or to these men?
He takes censers and fire and sends them.
Yep. Take censers, put fire in them. What else about that? Were they supposed to just do that in their own tents, or?
Come before the temple of the tabernacle.
Yeah, they were supposed to bring it before the Lord. And then God was to choose who was the holy one among those men. One thing that I thought was a little bit curious is, like, why would these men who are rebelling against Moses' authority accept Moses' instructions? Any thoughts?
Show that he rules the rest of it equally.
Okay, yeah.
It was kind of the same thing as with the priests and Elisha. Can't remember which one, where they followed his orders just because they thought what God, their gods, would let them be the ones in control of the situation.
Okay, yeah.
I think it was because they knew Moses knew what to do, and they thought, well, you know what to do because you're close to God, but we can be just as close as you are. You know, thus we can learn this.
Okay. It would be thought they could be as close to God as Moses was, but because Moses was close to God, he would know. Yeah, I think that, and it, God or Moses wasn't doing this to make his own decision. His instructions made sense as a way to receive fair judgment from God. So I think and all these points are leading in that direction. So who is it that Moses rebukes? I remember that three of the four ringleaders of this rebellion are Reubenites. But who is Moses directing his rebuke to?
Korah and the Levites.
Yeah. I think that's one reason we can definitely say that it's Korah's rebellion, because all of Moses' rebukes are directed to Korah and the sons of Levi. Even though I think it's pretty apparent that there were a lot of other tribes, if not all the other tribes, were represented. So, who was their complaint truly against? And how was it that it wasn't actually against Moses and Aaron? When you boil it down.
It was against God.
Yeah, it was against God. How was it against God?
Because Moses was his anointed. Moses and Aaron.
Yeah. God chose Moses and Aaron. So because they're rejecting the authority of Moses and Aaron, whom God chose, they're also rejecting God's authority, ultimately. And so let's go back again to Korah. What do you see in his character and in his motivation from this rebuke, as well as what he said to Moses?
Pride,
definitely. What else?
Probably jealousy.
Okay, jealousy. He's envious of the position that Moses and Aaron held.
Saying that God is with the congregation and using that as a leverage point, which was who's creating that as his as a foundational point, but it wasn't valid.
Okay, yeah, saying that the congregation is all holy, and they're all
Moses' relationship with God.
Yeah, he's misunderstanding that Moses had a particularly special relationship. And it seems like he's missing the point that God was the one who put him there. So he's rejected the authority of God. And he desired more privilege because Moses says, was he seeking the priesthood also? He wanted more privilege, he wanted more authority and more power. So, at this point, it doesn't seem like Dathan and Abiram are actually in front of Moses. Or maybe there's a little bit of time that elapses from here to verse 12. Would somebody like to read verse 12 down to 19?
Moses sent to call Dathan and Abram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, "We will not come up. Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to kill us all in the wilderness, that you should keep acting like a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up." And Moses was very angry and said to the Lord, "Do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, nor have I hurt one of them." How far?
To 19, if you would.
And Moses said to Korah, "Tomorrow, you and all your company be present before the Lord, you and they, as well as Aaron. Let each take a censer and put incense in it, and each of you bring a censer before the Lord, 250 censers, both you and Aaron, each with a censer." So every man took his censer, put fire in it, laid incense in it, and stood at the door of the tabernacle meeting, Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered all the congregation against him at the door of the tabernacle meeting. And the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation.
Thank you. All right, so Dathan and Abiram seem like they're not actually there, at least by verse 12. And so Moses summons them, and they're insolently refusing to come. And why did they refuse? What was their reason for not obeying Moses' summons?
Basically complaining that Moses brought them up out of what they viewed as prosperity into the wilderness and didn't take them on into the land that was promised to them.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me that they use the same phrase to describe Egypt as the promised land. It's like, as much as they suffered in Egypt, they still started considering it a land flowing with milk and honey, like, as, which is the same way God described the promised land. But instead of actually bringing them to that, they're accusing Moses of having brought them out to just kill them in the wilderness instead of fulfilling the promise. And again, we see a misunderstanding, because it was because of their failure, the congregation's failure to obey God, that God punished them. It was not Moses punishing them. So how was their complaint to be resolved?
To go on what you're saying, if Moses hadn't been there, it seems that God was willing to completely destroy the congregation.
True.
So if it hadn't been for Moses, they would have probably not even been there at that point.
Yeah, Moses was not the one to punish them. He interceded for them and actually saved them multiple times up to this point. And he's going to do it again shortly. So they were going to, and we already touched on this before, but so they would all come before God the next day and offer incense before the Lord, and then God would choose among them. And that was to take place at the entrance of the tent of meeting, or the tabernacle. And God was the one who was going to pronounce the judgment. It was not Moses. And as I had mentioned earlier, in verse 19, it says that Korah assembled the whole congregation. So the whole congregation is there to witness this. How was it that they could know that this judgment was authentic? That it was God making the judgment, not Moses? Or that God approved of this judgment? Okay, I'm not looking for that one yet. It's a little bit earlier. The end of verse 19.
Glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation.
Yes, God's presence was evident to everyone there. And so what was the sentence that God handed down? Moses, actually, we haven't read that. So let's go ahead and read the next section there. Let's see, up to, so verse 20 up through verse 35. Tristan, would you like to read that?
And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. Then they fell on their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and you be angry with all the congregation? So the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the congregation, saying, get away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. When Moses rose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him, and he spoke to the congregation, saying, depart now from the tents of these wicked men. Touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in all their sins. So they got away from around the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents with their wives, their sons, and their little children. And Moses said, by this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of my own will. If these men die naturally like all men, or if they are visited by the common fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. And if the Lord creates a new thing, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive into the pit, then you will understand that these men have rejected the Lord. Now it came to pass, as he finished speaking all these words, that the ground split apart under them, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households and all the men with Korah and all their goods. So they and all those with them went down alive into the pit. The earth closed over them, and they perished from among the assembly. Then all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, and they said, let the earth swallow us up also. And a fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering incense.
So what was the sentence that God decided on? What was the sentence he handed down initially? Yes, it wasn't just the leaders of the rebellion. The whole congregation had been rebelling, so he was going to destroy them all. But Moses and Aaron again interceded, and because of their plea, God chose not to actually destroy the whole congregation. And so he shows mercy to the congregation, but he's still going to be just. So who was it that actually paid the penalty?
Well, all of those 250 plus, there were four or five that are mentioned.
And their families. So the 250 men were consumed by fire here at the end of this. And then Korah, Dathan, and Abiram and their families were destroyed. However, if you notice something in there, who is not mentioned that you might have expected to be mentioned? Yes, On is never mentioned after verse 1. So I'm not sure what happened to him, if he backed out or what, but he's not mentioned. There is one other thing that I'd like you to take note of that is not mentioned. Whose families were punished as well? So verse 27, they got away from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And then it says, and Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents together with their wives, their sons, and their little ones. There's nothing mentioned about Korah's family. Korah himself, yes. His family is not mentioned. And that's important to actually that's actually important to the history of the Bible. It's not just important to this particular story. So what does that say about Korah? That his family was not there and did not die with him.
He took responsibility for his actions. He didn't inflict his actions upon his family.
Okay. So Dathan and Abiram stood there, and I kind of get the impression from this that they're pretty arrogant about the way that they may have been standing there. So I'm not sure if it's, and it, apparently Korah was willing to stand there. Andrew.
Based on what we see in verse 32.
Hold on. Yeah, Andrew.
All the men with Korah, with all their goods.
Yeah, it's Korah and his company is the way mine puts it.
Well, this says with all their goods, I don't know.
Yeah, it does say all their goods as well. So Dathan and Abiram's tents and all their possessions go down with them, presumably possibly Korah's as well. Rick.
Well, it could be that Korah's family said, well, I've got to go in from here too.
Yes. I think that this is kind of saying that he's failing to inspire his family to follow him. He may be willing to take this responsibility for himself, but his family did not stick with him. And so I think we can see that his children did not see him as a role model. They weren't willing to stand by him. They did not agree with what he did. And I find it interesting also when Moses warns the congregation and hands down the judgment from God, he's almost polite about it. Depart, please, from the tents of these wicked men and touch nothing of theirs. He's not actually commanding them so much as he's requesting that they do that because he wants them to be saved. And so he also words it to make it very clear that this is a judgment that is going to come from God. It's going to be God's decision. He may say, or he said what the judgment would be if God chose to punish them. But he does not say God will punish them. So again, he's making it clear who this judgment is coming from. So what is it that Korah, Dathan, and Abiram were guilty of? As stated here. Rebellion? Yes, but there is one specific statement at the end of verse 30 that says what the root of that rebellion was or what it meant.
They spurned the Lord.
Yeah, they spurned the Lord, or they despised the Lord. So how had they despised God? What does it mean to despise God? And what else might we pull from that? Could it be that they were presumptuous about God's worship because they wanted to be part of the priesthood and they were willing to go with Moses' suggestion to bring incense before God, which obviously the way that God's judgment comes down, God did not approve of that. Because that was, the worship was to be led by the priesthood. And I don't see from what is said here any repentance on the part of Dathan and Abiram or Korah. It seems that they're pretty arrogant in the way that they're standing before God's judgment. They're not repentant, they don't seem to be afraid. It seems kind of arrogant and scornful of God's judgment.
That they believe that what they're doing is right.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys, especially the guys with the censers, obviously don't think that God's going to disapprove of what they're doing.
Yeah. But even when Moses has warned the people to get away from these wicked men and not to be caught up in their sins, they're still just going to stand there. So the people, after the God's judgment takes place, before we get there, how long did God wait to execute his judgment? Exactly. He didn't wait at all. As soon as Moses finished speaking, he took care of the problem. It reminds me of Ecclesiastes 8, because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed swiftly. God certainly was swift in his punishment. And the people just flee because they're afraid that God's going to cause the earth to swallow them up as well. So in Jude, there is another mention of Korah. I'm just going to summarize this real quick because I have something else I wanted to get to. In verses 3 through 16, it's talking about false teachers, and it mentions that they're following in the way of Korah's rebellion. And it describes what kind of people these teachers are. So I think we can, because they're compared to Cain, to Balaam, and to Korah. So we can see that these false teachers are envious, like Cain was of his brother. They were greedy for gain, like Balaam was. And perhaps they were desiring power and authority, like Korah. And Jude describes these people, and I think there's a lot of this that could be applied, you can see in Korah as well. He's describing these people as grumblers, malcontents, following their own sinful desires. They're loudmouth boasters. It's part of that description. I think I could, and not all of these do I see directly, but I could definitely see Korah and his cohorts acting this way. So how would you describe Korah and his character? Just quick summary. I have one more thing I'd like to get to real quick.
Verse 12 of Judah says, caring for themselves. That's one characteristic of him and his and Dathan and Abiram.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they wanted the inheritances in the land.
Yeah, they're caring for themselves. They're wanting the inheritances that they rejected, essentially. They're selfish. They want it their way. They're lusting after power. What else? Anything else?
It's interesting, when the spies came back, Caleb spoke up by himself. Korah had other guys with him, so he wasn't willing to just do it by himself, I don't think.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Well, I was curious, and I'm wondering if the distinction is made that Dathan and Abiram stood at the door of their tents with their families, because Korah wouldn't even do that. That maybe he was cowering in the tent.
Okay.
That maybe that's what that distinction is.
Okay. That's an interesting thought as well. All right, so I'd like to go off with our last few minutes and talk about what happened to Korah's family. Because I think we can learn some lessons from this. The sons of Korah were not annihilated with Korah. And we get a clear hint that they did not follow their father in this, because the sons of Korah are noted as the authors of 11, probably 12, of the Psalms. Psalm 42 and 43, I think, is probably originally the same part of the same psalm, because it has the same kind of chorus to it, which is why I said probably 12. 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49. Psalm 84, 85, 87, and 88 are all attributed to the sons of Korah. Also, was very interesting to me is that Heman, who along with Asaph and Jeduthun, David appointed to be in charge of the service of song in the house of the Lord, was one of the sons of Korah. He was a descendant of Korah. Also intriguing to me was he was a grandson of Samuel, the priest, prophet, and judge. So Samuel himself was among the sons of Korah, which is why I said earlier that the fact that Korah's sons are not mentioned there is important in the history of the Bible, because there are some very major characters who descended from Korah. It also shows us God's mercy in that he does not judge the sons for the father's iniquities. And you can find the genealogy where you can see Samuel as well as Heman's descent from Korah in First Chronicles 6, verse 31 through 38. And so we can take heart, because there are so many people today who they don't have parents who are as admirable as they might like. They may have a father who is an alcoholic, or parents who are divorced, or a mother who never knew how to show them love, or a father who may have been violent in his anger, or a mother who tore her family down by her words. There's so many ways that parents can fall short, but we don't have to follow the way that our parents are if they are not righteous people. Some people just think that, and there is a tendency for people to follow in the same sins as their parents because they see that as how to be a father, even though they didn't like it, and they tend toward that. But you can turn away from that, just like the sons of Korah did. And you can rise above your own faults and learn to live differently than your parents did. And through that, you can even be an example to generations to come. After all, we still read of the sons of Korah today. And we even sing songs in our songbooks. And not all of them are in our songbooks, but some of the songs in our songbooks are taken from the Psalms that the sons of Korah wrote. So we're still singing their words. For instance, just as a couple examples as we close, as the deer, ivory palaces is from, or as the deer is from Psalm 42, the first few verses in there, or especially verse 1. Ivory palaces is Psalm 45, verses 8. Specifically, Psalm 46, "Be still and know that I am God," is taken from Psalm 46, written by the sons of Korah. And there are several other things. 87, "Glorious things of thee are spoken," is from that one. So, I appreciate all your comments and your attention, and I hope it was useful.